Hey guys, just a quick message before we get started. So I've noticed the types of support that creatives have been showing one another during everything that we've been going through, and this to me is absolutely incredible. So I started this creative chat series on our YouTube. You can find that at youtube.com/soderandtelepaths. And the point of these is to really get to know the creative and get to discover more art. So I thought to myself, why not have this as an audio format podcast? So this is going to be featured between all of our main episodes that Adam and I do. So sit back and enjoy this 0.5 episode.
So my name is Anthony N. Castle. I currently live in Adelaide, though I did live in Melbourne for a few years and travelled prior to that. I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, and I'm an author, but in this context, I'm primarily a creative writer, and I write comic books in collaboration with an artist called Chadwick Ashby. We've put out 8 books over the last 6 years under the banner New London Comics, and it's hard to actually describe the kind of work that we do, but we've put out anthologies, we've put out one-shots, we've put out graphic poetry, we've put out, you know, traditional genre horror comics, we've done, you know, gothic YA fiction and absurdist art books as well. So we've essentially been putting out a range of work for the last 6 years, and recently we concluded that with Dead Ends 2, which was a 120-page anthology follow-up to our first release ever, which was called Dead Ends as well. So.
So we'll get to Dead Ends 2 because I really want to talk about that, because the artwork is the first thing I saw was the PowerPoint with for a head and with the arms and legs. And so when I saw that, I was just like, that's bonkers. But how did you, because I've seen that you recently wrote for, was it New Guardian?
Yeah, The Guardian Australia.
The Guardian, yeah. So does that mean you started with journalism or?
No, it's actually rather messy. Like traditionally, you know, I came out of university a writer. Like I was an English major. I did my honours in English literature, and I came out looking to write more or less anything I was allowed to. So I was hoping to write fiction, but in my 20s, I was working on film scripts, indie projects with friends of mine. And I started copywriting, or trying to copyright to try and make some money on the side. And eventually that bled into more traditional nonfiction writing and journalism. Like I'm not an investigative journalist. I don't do reportage, but I've written for magazines in my day job, and that's also extended to contributing to places like The Guardian. So I've written a few articles for The Guardian and non-fiction pieces, essays for places like The Lifted Brow and Mianjin here in Australia. But it's one of those, I often don't know what to do when I have to talk about my writing, because sometimes I'll be talking to, I guess, quote unquote, more serious literary crowd, and I'll be talking about writing op-eds or being a professional copywriter. And then sometimes I'm talking to a comics crowd, and we're talking popular culture and the comics medium. And sometimes I feel like I either fit in both or I don't fit in either. So actually, one of the writers that was a mascot to me when I was younger, when I was in university, was Neil Gaiman, because I was an English major, and I had, in essence, grown out of the superhero books I had grown up with, or at least I thought I had grown out of them. That's how you feel when you're an English major. And Sandman comics, like the Sandman books, kept me connected to the medium. And then later on, stuff like Mr. Punch and Signal to Noise, the work that Neil Gaiman did with Dave McKean, like I suddenly found my feet a little bit and remembered how much I love the medium. And Neil Gaiman is an author who, he was a journalist, and he wrote, I think one of his first jobs was writing a book about Duran Duran. I'm not sure if that's right, but he's essentially a writer who's done a little bit of everything. And so that was my template when I started out, and it's continued on. I've not had the same success though. Doing a bit of everything has not worked out as well for me as it has for Mr. Neil Gaiman.
Did you feel that you just found more of a voice that you could find a bit of synergy with when it came to Gaiman? Because, I mean, Vertigo comics and comics like Sandman, you've got to agree that there's something different about someone that reads that book, or it's someone that wants to delve a bit into the grittier side of comics. It's not like your Captain Americas, your Batmans, etc. It's more something different. Did you find that you just had needed a bit of a different voice to resonate with, to find what you were into?
Yeah, and you know, I still remember when I was in university, I was cleaning out my room and I found all of my old comics. I was a big Superman reader. I loved Superman. I still love Superman. I think Superman's a great character, but I remember finding the folder where I put like my favorite Superman comics and going back and reading them and looking at them with an adult's eyes and realizing that these big dramatic moments that had affected me when I was 13 were suddenly over in two pages and there was an ad for bubblegum, right? Now,
try this new drink, Pepsi Max.
Yes, the death of Superman game on Sega Mega Drive. And so I suddenly realized, I was like, oh, these are soap opera periodicals for children to sell bubblegum and video games. Now, that's actually not, that doesn't sum up the quality of those books or those stories. There's actually some fantastic stories there, and I appreciate them the older I get. But there was definitely a sense that I realized, okay, like if you're going to read Capes, they're going to take you so far. I'm an English student, and there's also a sense in which Neil Gaiman really just brought like an awareness of the English literary tradition to American comics. So you read that initial Sandman run and he's writing about Milton and he's writing about Shakespeare, you know, the Sandman device, the character allows you to go to different places and at different times. And so it was just an opportunity for me to connect with something that was, I guess it had a little more context for me. Again, I was an English major, so, you know, and I was young. I wanted to be a serious writer. So the idea that there were comics that were serious literary comics, which is how Neil Gaiman branded them, that was something that resonated with me. Even though the older I get, again, the more I realize that literary comics is a bit of a distraction because comics aren't necessarily literature. I mean, they can be literature, but they're a visual medium. So I no longer look to literary comics as something which, you know, validates or justifies the medium, but it worked for me when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's only so much Alan Moore you can read, isn't there, before you need a palate cleanser.
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in the wake of like that British invasion. I grew up in the wake of Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman and Grant Morrison and that whole era. And for me, like Alan Moore is still a massive influence on my process. Like there's still moments in my writing process that I took from Alan Moore's work and from his essays. But I was not someone who like loved all the work. Like I think Watchmen is a work of genius, but I don't enjoy reading it. Like I remember, you know, even when the Watchmen movie was coming, that Zack Snyder movie, I remember saying to someone, you know, this book is remarkable, but like I don't think that, like, in my mind, if superheroes have any worth, it may not necessarily be for this kind of book, which I think is actually the premise of the book. But, you know, I'm always more interested in stuff like Tom Strong, like the more reconstructionist superhero stuff that Alan Moore did. But, it was very much like a mess of those British writers that I guess definitely kept me invested in the medium.
How did you get into comics?
You know, that's an interesting question.
Writing them, yeah.
I'd have it here somewhere. I'm not sure. I still have some of the first comics I made. So when I was a child, I would write stories and I would draw and I would read comics and I would eventually I figured out that, well, I could just make my own. And so I think, you know, like you do when you're young or as a child, you start by imitating something. So I would map out my favorite moments from comics or from stories, and then eventually you try and make them. And so the first comics I wrote were, you know, Superman comics that I was writing when I was 9 or 10. Or I developed this, I came up with a superhero called The Flame when I was like 8, which was essentially the Human Torch. I just took the Human Torch. But I made him like the Flash, like the Bronze Age Flash, where the costume was like inside the ring.
Well, there's a Spider-Man character called the Spot, so I think you're fine. And then Batman has a bad guy called Balloon Man, so I think the Flame's not that bad in the pantheon of comics. Yeah,
I was trying to make it different to the Human Torch, and I was like, well, how would it work? And I thought about a flame on a stovetop, how it isn't like jagged, it's like soft. And I thought, you know, that's like that gas flame has that kind of soft quality. So I drew him like that. I did consider calling him the Gas for a while, but I abandoned that idea. So I started making my own comics as a child. Now, when I was 13, like I started high school, and Chadwick, my collaborator, who's like my best friend as well, he started at the same high school. Now, we weren't necessarily, I don't think we were friends, first off. I don't think we necessarily liked each other, but we noticed that we both illustrated, and we tended to write things. And, you know, it was only a matter of time we started to swap comics. And then when we were 14, we were talking about making our own. And, you know, you don't necessarily finish comics when you're 14. You start them, then you realize they're hard work and move on to something else. So,
Like girls.
Girls, PlayStation.
Yeah. Something that's a little bit more attainable.
20% girls.
Yeah.
It was PlayStation, it just happened. So that was really it. But I guess our collaboration really started properly in adulthood. And I guess my forays into writing comics really happened about 10 years ago. We had just more or less had our quarter life crisis. Like, we had just come through our mid 20s, and I had actually been working on a graphic novel project for a couple of years that hadn't taken off with another artist. And I was really just trying to land a project somewhere. And, you know, Chadwick and I looked at each other and said, this is a bit silly. Like, we were always going to make comics. You know, we made them when we were younger. Why wouldn't we just make them now? So that's essentially, it kind of came in two phases. You know, I was interested in them as a child. And then there's this moment in my mid 20s when it just occurs to me that I was always going to do this. I should probably get back to it.
So let's talk about Dead Ends too. The artwork especially is, that's what really brought my attention to it and caught my attention as well. Tell us a bit about that comic book.
I'm just wondering. So, I would have sent you art from the first story, PowerPoint head.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I have some books on hand in case I can.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So this is the book itself, Dead Ends 2.
Yeah.
So this is an anthology, a series of short stories. The thing about Chad is, and he's the artist on most of our books. We've had two guest artists work with us in the past, and one of those guest artists, Cody Anderson, has work in this book too. But Chad as an artist is actually really versatile. He comes out of like a cartooning tradition. So he grew up, you know, cartooning similar to, I guess, Matt Groening in The Simpsons, or even Jim Davis with Garfield. When I first met him, he would like draw a lot of Garfield. And so when it comes to drawing a comic, Chad never draws a comic the same way twice. And so I'll flip the book open and we can have a look. So the opening story in Dead Ends 2 is called The Blood from the Stone, which we really produced. We wanted to make essentially the weirdest, strangest, most dreamlike, most sincere thing we could think of. And the art style here really borrows a lot from, I guess, everything from traditional animation. But there's like a slight kind of Japanese animation style in there as well. And this may have been one of the pages you got beforehand.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, with the where I'm not sure if the PowerPoint head is crying or bleeding out of its
point. I think it's both. I think it's both. But actually, if you look at something like, and actually Chad, because Chad's a writer as well, he wrote and illustrated the final story in in Dead Ends 2. And if you look at that, he's produced that in a far more cartoon-friendly style.
Yeah, okay. Especially the eye work. Artwork especially, you can tell that someone is a Garfield fan, especially that with that.
Yeah, it has what you'd call the like the ping pong ball eyes,
like, yeah,
like a bit like a Muppet. But that and Chad's also got like a what almost like a picture book quality to some of his illustration. Like he does almost a very soft kind of illustrative look, and it's, you know, he's a guy who's like, he's, so this is a perfect example. On one page, we have like something surreal and nightmarish and horrific. And the other page, we literally have something that's designed to look like a children's picture book. So I know that's a blurry image on a computer screen, but Chad's a phenomenal artist. What's impressive about Chadwick's work is that whenever we sit down to approach a story, he starts to think about the art style as being unique to that story.
Okay.
So, yep. You know, we've
which done, works well for anthologies.
Yeah, because this anthology, like the opening story, The Blood from the Stone, which you have some sample art from, is that we essentially produced that as something which we wanted to be both apocalyptic and mythic, but also very domestic and dreamlike. And we don't necessarily have a strong context for other than the story is a dream, but it's a dream about something very real for a young person. So there's we were really inspired by Maurice Sendak and the work that he did on books like In the Night Kitchen. And even Little Nemo, like the traditional comic Little Nemo, like we wanted something that felt like a dream, but didn't have a character waking up at the end. So you weren't necessarily certain of whether it was a character dreaming or whether this is just the world, I guess, they inhabit.
And so Lovecraftian a bit.
Yeah. It's essentially about a tribe of kind of Luciferian cannibals who sometimes resemble fish and sometimes resemble PowerPoints. We liked that idea of just building characters and creatures out of almost the found objects of childhood. So there's a little character in there that's more or less an iPad with a hairdryer, and it's but you know, wanting to make that really dreamlike, we experimented with color palettes and the idea of setting a comic in a wasteland that's essentially like an infinite space with mist and with darkness. And then, you know, we'd approach other books, and you know, we actually spent about 6 months experimenting with the art style. Like we spent 6 months just drawing environments, experimenting with color palettes and lighting, kind of figuring out what the story looks like. But
do you think you resonate more with anthologies and that's why you've done a couple of them, or
a little? We were always reluctant to start a comic book series. We knew a lot of creators that would put out an issue one or an issue zero when that was popular. And they'd say it's an eight series, you know, it's an eight book series was always the proposal or something like that. And then two and a half years later, they'd be two or three issues in and burnt out, and actually usually really unhappy with the first issue. And so what we realized was that getting into the long form storytelling or getting into a series wasn't going to be helpful for us. So we wanted to attack lots of different stories in smaller formats, because not only did we want to do different things, we wanted to get better as creators. And the anthology is really about that, because you know, we can do 14 pages of something surrealist, or we can do graphic poetry, or we can do something that's mythic and dreamlike, and then we can do something that's cartoonish and rather sweet. And actually there's a story in there titled Grounded, which has art by Cody Anderson, who was a guest artist on the book. And that's a straight up romance. Like that's a romance story. So, you know, we were always drawn to the idea of doing, I guess, contained projects, not only to, you know, stop ourselves from getting bound up in some nightmarish long project, but also just to be able to polish what we do and to get better as creators. But there is something that's really interesting about an anthology. It's almost like a concept album. Like when we've put together Dead Ends and now Dead Ends 2, and both times it's felt like we're putting together a concept album, because you're creating high points and low points and different moods and things. There's a symmetry to it as well. And you always put a bit of a palate cleanser in the middle, you know, like, so I do really appreciate anthologies. What I used to love is there was a whole genre of comics which were put out in my childhood, which weren't comics at the time. Well, they were called magazines. And it was stuff like Mad Magazine, or which is essentially a comic. They called it a magazine to escape some of the censorship. And in England, you had stuff like Splitting Image, which, and these were comic books presented as magazines, but they actually they really worked as anthologies, because you don't know what you're going to get. Like, you'd pick something up off of a shelf, pick up a Mad Magazine or one of those publications, and even, you know, variations, Cracked or Crazy. And Crazy was Crazy the Marvel? I think Crazy may have been the Marvel version. Then Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck was Marvel.
Yeah, I don't want to get that wrong on the internet. Yeah. Double check it. But I'll get cancelled. You got Crazy wrong.
Get crucified.
That's right. I used to love those books, because you'd pick them up and you had no idea what was going to be in them. And I am attracted to that, like with anthologies. There is sometimes I feel like with comics there are readers who really like to be able to pick something up knowing exactly what they're going to get. And even, you know, some comic readers will get angry if a book strays from what it's meant to be, and I don't understand that. Like, that's baffling to me.
Yeah, I think it's the when they look at a well-known character and I guess their perception of what that character is and how they feel, and then they sort of project their own belief and value system onto that character. And when someone can be so influenced by a character, or even, you know, there's the DC versus Marvel conversation as well, if they feel that that character or that set or that team of characters is what they've grown up on and based their belief and their values and their morals on. And as soon as something challenges that, they're just like, walls up.
They're done. They're done.
Yeah.
I remember there was a story. This is probably well over 10 years ago now, I think. I won't try and guess it in case I get that wrong. But there was a story about a decade ago where Superman walked across America.
I don't remember that one.
It was called Grounded or something. He went on a walking tour of America. I don't remember why. It's just, this was the story. Superman was going to walk the length of America for a reason. I don't know. But I just remember the outcry at the time. Like, there were a lot of adults who were not happy with the fact that Superman was going to walk across America for a few issues. And I was like, I understand. You want Superman to fly and to stop runaway trains and to fight aliens. You have like 80 years of that. Superman can walk for a few months. Isn't that okay?
Yeah,
Actually, I have a friend who still, he picks up Batman comics on and off. And he more or less admits that it's a little bit like comfort food for him. And he said to me once, he was like, listen, if I walk into a comic book shop, I want to be able to pull Batman off the shelf and open it up. And on page six, you turn the page and he's kind of jumping in the alleyway and the cape's out. You're at the splash page, you know, the glorious splash page where Batman is jumping out of the air. But for him, he was like, that's what I want. I want my Batman jumping in the alleyway splash page.
Yeah, that air of nostalgia.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I loved about Batman when I was a kid. Like, that's what I still love about Batman. I'm not begrudging anyone enjoying it, but yeah, it's not something that we necessarily do when we put out existential fables filled with our PowerPoint-headed children who are being tortured by Luciferian fish emperors. So
one of the things I'm asking on these interviews is give me a feel-good story that you've heard of or seen lately. Could be COVID-19 related. It doesn't have to be, but that specifically spoke to you.
Oh no, this is really hard. I watched one of your episodes before, and I heard you ask the feel good story question, and I thought, oh no, what am I going to say?
Fuck.
I had a conversation with Chadwick, right? the artist, the collaborator on these books. We had this conversation yesterday where we were like, we just have to laugh about things. Like, we have to remember to laugh. And we just, you know, because so often, especially as an adult, when you're managing creative pursuits and families and jobs and global pandemics, it's hard to find the humor in things. And we sat there and we looked at each other and we were like, I don't know what we got. It's really grim. It's really grim, actually. It's actually really tough, because I'm trying to think of a feel good story, and I don't really have one. And it's not to say they're not out there. I certainly have friends who've inspired me, like, over the last month, in like a time like this, when, you know, the thing I've realized is that everyone is affected, even in countries that are relatively on top of the problem. So here in South Australia, I think we've had one case recorded in the last 2 weeks, right? So here in Adelaide, we've done a fairly good job of managing it and shutting the borders, and the testing has been increasing. And so there's a sense in which, like, well, I understand that in the United States, like, and in England, the tragedy there is stunning. It's just stunning to watch. And so it's hard, because even in a city like Adelaide, where we've been relatively unaffected at this point, it could always take a turn for the worse again. We all know people who've lost income. Like, we all know people who've lost jobs, who've lost hours at their jobs. We know people that haven't been able to go ahead with plans for starting a family, people who don't know if they can afford their homes. And like, just about everyone I've spoken to has family and friends who either work as a healthcare professional or are immunocompromised themselves. And so there's a sense in which, even in a city like Adelaide, which is actually on top of the issue fairly well at this point, it still affects everyone's lives.
Where can people who want to support you and, I guess, reach out to you, doesn't have to be monetarily, but just to check out your stuff, where can they find you?
Well, if you would like to actually purchase one of our books, then too bad. We're terrible publishers and we don't make them available. So usually you can find some of our work in either Greenlight Comics here in Adelaide, and often you can find it in All Star Comics in Melbourne. Though at the moment, I'm pretty sure the books have sold out and we've not restocked during the pandemic. Those books will be in those stores later this year. We'll do a restock once things go back to normal somewhat. We have one book on Comixology at the moment, and that was our horror comic Redwood, which was a one-shot comic. We describe it as a cross between Romeo and Juliet and Stephen King. The rest of our work will be available on Comixology, rolling out over the next year and a half. It depends on the process there with the company. But if you'd like to know more about us and follow our process online, you can always go to New London Comics on Facebook. And we often post art updates and, I guess, coverage of what we're doing and what we're up to. That tends to be the place where we put out, I guess, the most information about what we're working on and what conventions we'll be doing. And you can always head to newlondoncomics.com if you want to see, I guess, a more formal presentation of our work. You can find me at anthonyncastle.com, or just look for Anthony N. Castle on Twitter. I, complain about my children keeping me awake at night daily on social media, and occasionally I'll talk about my work. So you can find us there, and if you're patient and if you're curious enough, you'll see more of our work popping up on Comixology later this year and into 2021.
Oh, this has been fun. What's your favorite soda?
Oh, that's the hardest question out of all of them. That's more difficult than the feel-good story. So I don't have a single answer. The main thing is, my favorite soda, generally speaking, like, as a concept, it would have to be Coca-Cola, because it's like the soda, right? Like, This is the template for how you sell sugar flavored water. Coca-Cola is amazing. And Coca-Cola, because I work in copywriting and communications, I'm fascinated by branding. And so something like, I can fall into the research on the branding of something like Coca-Cola for hours. Like, Coke has managed to tie their taste to people's memories of childhood and of adolescence. Like, Coke is almost synonymous with sunshine and happiness. So I love that. That's amazing. Now, I don't drink it, right? I don't drink it because I just don't really, I don't drink sugared sodas really. So that's my favorite in terms of like the concept of soda. What do I actually drink? I probably drink soda water more than anything because I'm old and boring. But I also drink, I drink diet ginger beer. Because it has no caffeine and it's low calories. And that's how I live right now, which is low caffeine and low calories. So, but shout out to Coke. You know, if anyone could look at cocaine and think, let's sell this to children, I think surely that's the winner out of all of them.
Thanks for stopping by.
No, no, thanks. Thanks for having me.
That was Anthony Castle. If you enjoyed today's chat with Anthony Castle, go check out his comics and everything else he does at newlondoncomics.com. As always, intro music is by Clement Panchout. If you'd like to give us some support or show us some support, you can find Soda and Telecast on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram by just searching Soda and Telecast. Today's outro song is by indie duo Little Thieves, and I'm going to play their track Breathe to play us out.
Make you wait. It's taken all that I am. Oh, it's too late. If I'm honest, I knew that this could never fit. You had left on me. Heaven forbid I'd expect back what you expect from me. If I'm honest, I knew that this could never fit. But being honest with something that I could never